Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, Broadway, from the Theater Guild on the Air, bringing us an adaptation of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Allegro, which first opened at the Majestic Theater in October of 1947 on the Great White Way and ran for 315 performances. This episode notable for the Theater Guild as it marks their 250th show, heard on November 25th, 1951 on ABC.
Star in it, John Lund as Joseph Taylor Jr. and Jane Powell as the nurse Emily have come on from Hollywood, and Kenny Del Mar from New York, who tells the story. Featured as Jenny is Roberta Jonet, playing the part she played in the original Broadway production. Douglas Watson is featured as Charlie. So let's light the birthday candles marking 250 years of Detroit, and incidentally 250 performances of the Theater Guild on the Air, as we proceed with Allegro, adapted for us by Robert Anderson and directed by Homer Fickett.
This is the story of a boy from our town, a boy named Joseph Taylor, Jr. Nothing very remarkable about Joe. That is, nothing more remarkable than there is about any of us. But I like Joe. Like the way he handled himself when he came up against it. When he came up against the same sort of thing that can happen to any of us. Joe was born to Dr. and Mrs. Taylor on a lovely spring morning in 1905.
The lady in bed is Marjorie Taylor. Dr. Joseph Taylor's wife.
Except for the day when she married Joe, this is the happiest day of her life.
Except for the day when she married Joe, this is the happiest day of her life.
Where have you been, Joe?
Making the rounds, dear. You were asleep when I left. How do you feel?
I feel like jumping out of bed and dancing.
Oh, don't. How's old Skeezix?
Oh, old Skeezix is asleep.
Joe, you in there?
Here I am, Mother. In with Marjorie.
I'll take the young man into his crib. Oh, did you hear that?
What?
He brought up a bubble.
Oh, isn't he clever?
That's Grandma's good boy.
Mother Taylor.
What, Marjorie?
Do you think he'll ever get to look any better?
Why, sure he will. He'll look younger when he's older.
Uh-huh. One morning, Joe decided that he's had enough of this crawling around on all fours, and he stood up all by himself.
Marjorie, look.
He's standing up.
What's that?
He's standing up.
Look. Oh, he's falling.
No, Marjorie, look.
He's going to fall.
No, look. He was almost falling, but he put one foot out to save himself.
And he didn't fall.
He took a step.
One foot, other foot,
one foot. Look at him. He took another.
Now you can go wherever you want, wherever you want to go.
Joe learned that going forward was easier than standing still. And he went forward, step by step, until all of a sudden, as his grandma used to say, he was a man. That is, he was enough of a man to be packing his bags and going away to college. The night before he left, Joe's mother and father were talking on the side porch.
don't look so mopey, Marjorie. The boy isn't going away forever.
You're not his mother.
That's the most unnecessary statement you've made this year.
Well, you know very well what I mean. When he comes back for Christmas holidays, he'll be a different boy. I won't even know him.
I'll point him out to you.
Oh, you look kind of mopey yourself.
Oh, I had another tough day. A lot of patients. Then a couple of hours working on a hospital fund.
You'll have your hospital someday, Joe. I just know it.
You've got one of your feelings about it?
Yes, I have a feeling.
I hope Joe marries a girl who gets feelings about things. Do you suppose he'll marry Jenny Brinker?
Oh, hard to say. You'll be meeting a lot of new girls at college.
It's only dumb luck when a boy picks the right girl the way I did.
Oh, you say that to make me feel good.
Well, doesn't it?
Ah, fool.
A fella needs a girl to sit by his side at the end of a weary day. To sit by his side and listen to him talk and agree with the things he'll say.
My fellow needs a girl to hold in his arms when the rest of his world goes wrong. To hold in his arms and know that she believes that her
and his job's well done, he wants to share the prize he's won.
If no one shares and no one cares, with the fun of a job well done,
for a prize you.
College away from home were pretty miserable. But this picture changed quite suddenly when one day on the campus he was stopped by the freshman football hero, Charlie Townsend.
Your name's Taylor, isn't it?
Why, yes. Joe Taylor, a junior.
I'm Charlie Townsend. We seem to be taking the same courses.
Oh, are you pre-med?
Yep. Don't know why exactly. I got an uncle in Chicago who juggles pills.
Say, could I have a look at your notebook?
Oh, sure. Here.
I've got a father who juggle pills.
Say, you take some notes. Would you let me borrow them?
You can read the writing.
Say, you doing anything tonight?
Well, I was planning to do...
I got a date with a girl, and she's got a sister who's going to be a nurse. Asked me to bring somebody along.
Oh, well, no thanks. I got a lot of Latin to translate.
Okay, you take the dead languages, I'll take the live women.
Besides, I got a girl back home, and we're going to be married, I think.
Okay. I'll give you a rain check on it.
Back home, Joe's girl Jenny and her friend Hazel used to sit on the side porch in the evenings and talk about love, marriage.
Jenny, don't you ever worry about you and Joe Taylor having to wait so long before you get married?
Of course I worry, Hazel. And Papa's always telling me I'm a fool to even think of marrying a doctor.
Why does he have to be a doctor, Jenny?
Because his mother wants him to be. Her father was a doctor and her husband's a doctor. And if her darling son Joey isn't a doctor, this whole town will get sick and die.
Gosh, I don't envy you, Jenny. With his mother against you, there isn't much you can do.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Hazel. There might be a lot I can do. It might take a little time, but I think there's a lot I can do.
And so, in not very subtle ways that were nonetheless disturbing to Joe, Jenny began to do what she could do. Her letters to Joe began to read something like this.
Remember Hazel Skinner? She was over to see me today, and I bet your ears burned. Hazel is going to marry a man named Bobby Martin. He's only 1 year older than you, but he's making lots of money selling automobiles. His family wanted him to be a lawyer, but he says the trouble with professions is that you study years and you're an old man before you make any money. Well, I guess that's all the news. Fondly, Jenny.
When Joe was a senior in college, Mr. Brinker took a serious step. The kind of step fathers used to take to keep their daughters from marrying the wrong boy. He took her to Europe, and Jenny kept up her series of disturbing letters.
Dear Joe, I met a charming boy named Bertram Woolhaven. His father is in the coal and lumber business, too. Bertram is teaching me how to swim. We're learning a new stroke. Bertram is teaching me how to tango.
As it would be for any young man, this was too much for our Joe.
Hey, Charlie, how about your girl's sister? You know, Emily, the one that's going to be a nurse? Is she still available for a date?
I'm afraid this date hasn't been much fun for you, Emily.
Why not?
Well, here I am seeing you home, and up to this point, I've done nothing but talk about Jenny. Let's talk about you.
Oh, we don't have to.
Well, maybe we don't, but I'd like to know something about you.
Why? We'll probably never see each other again.
Why, sure we will.
We'll see.
Now, look, I told you why I want to be a doctor. Now, you tell me why you want to be a nurse.
Well, I suppose I sound a little noble if I said I like to help people.
Well, that's obvious from tonight.
Ah, you helped yourself. You talked yourself out of it. You're being mad at Jenny.
But you listened.
Oh, I'm an expert at that.
Jenny doesn't know how much she owes to you.
Take my advice. Don't tell her.
You think she'd be jealous?
Oh, if she's human.
Huh. Where are you going when you start nursing?
Well, Charlie thinks his uncle, Dr. Denby, can use a fine, upstanding, 100% American girl like me in his office in Chicago.
Well, did you ever think you might get married long before you could become a nurse?
I don't think there's much danger of that.
Why?
What? Well, because I always seem to be going out with fellas like you on the rebound. And like a fool, I always let them talk themselves right back into love with their old girls. Well, this is where I live.
Oh.
Well, you don't have to see me to the door.
Well, thanks for, for being so nice. And...
Thank you, Joe. I had a fine time.
Not much, I'm afraid. But, well, maybe we can have another date sometime, and I won't talk about Jenny all the time.
Just half the time?
Yeah. How about next Friday?
Are you sure you want to? Or are you just being polite?
I'm sure.
All right. Good night, Joe.
Good night.
See you Friday.
Sure.
We have nothing to remember so far. So far. So far. We haven't walked by night and shared the light of a star. So far, your heart has never fluttered so near, so near, that my own heart alone could hear it. We
Julie? This is Joe. I just remembered I've got another engagement Friday night, so I won't be able to stop around. I'm sorry, Emily.
It's all right, Joe. I don't mind.
Oh, gee, thanks, Emily. Bye.
Goodbye, Joe.
We have nothing to remember so far. So far.
Toward the end of the summer, Jenny wrote Joe that it was all over between her and Bertram Woolhaven. And she was coming home. And then on a lovely evening in August, she was home.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Jenny.
You look different, Joe.
You look different, too.
Older?
Prettier.
Want to sit down in the hammock?
Yes. Yes, I would. Nice night.
It's just the kind of night I hoped it would be.
Did you? Did you think much about tonight, too?
Did you?
Oh, I think of you quite a lot. There's never a day. Oh, Jenny, I think about you all the time.
Do you, Joe?
Every minute.
You are never away from your home in my heart. There is never a day when you don't play a part. In a word that I say, that I see, you are never away, and I'll never be free. You're the smile on my face, or a song that I sing. You're a rainbow I chase on a morning in spring. You're a star in the lace of a wild willow tree, in the green leafy lace of a wild wind. Tonight you're no star, nor a song that I sing. In my arms where you are sweeter than spring. In my arms where you are, clinging closely to me, you are lovelier by far than I dreamed you could be.
Jenny.
Going to medical school next year?
Sure. You want me to, don't you?
Yes, I suppose so. But, well, Papa keeps saying that if you went in the coal and lumber business with him, you could be rich in a few years.
You mean instead of being a doctor?
Well, whatever happens, Joe, it's got to be you who decides. I'd never influence you one way or the other. You make up your own mind, darling.
And Joe did make up his mind. He went to medical school, and Jenny waited for him and made new plans for him, plans which she mentioned to Mrs. Taylor every now and again.
You know, Mrs. Taylor, my papa thinks it's a shame for Joe and me to have to struggle along for years when he's got this wonderful coal and lumber business and he could teach Joe and...
Jenny, what would you do if Joe refused to give up medicine?
I'd see to it that he became a real doctor.
Well, good.
A very rich one.
Oh.
We'd go to a big city or someplace. I'd help him get to be the richest doctor in town.
Jenny, aren't you confusing success with wealth? Now, I think my husband is a very successful man. He's doing work he likes for people he likes, and He's got the kind of home he needs. And...
Let go, Mother. You just want your son to do what you want him to do.
Well, that's not true, Jenny. I want him to do what he'll be happy at. I don't want him to be forced to live by someone else's false ideas of success.
You don't like me, and you never did. And I always knew it. Oh, I feel better now that war's declared.
So do I, Jenny. So do I.
But there was no war between Jenny and Mrs. Taylor, because 2 days later, Joe's mother suffered a heart attack and died. And then Jenny had it all her own way. And 2 years later, when Joe finished medical school, we were all invited to their wedding. With this ring, I thee wed.
The curtain rises on the second act of Allegro, starring Jane Powell as Emily, John Lund as Joe Taylor, Kenny Delmar as the storyteller, and featuring Roberta Jonet as Jenny Brinker and Douglas Watson as Charlie Townsend.
Yes, we were all there in the church to wish Joe and Jenny well. That was in 1928. The second year of Joe's practice was the first year of the Depression.
Hey, Jenny, what are you doing?
Hi, Hazel. I'm hanging out my watch. What's the matter?
I wanted you to look at the new chinchilla coat.
You got a chinchilla coat in these times?
Oh, not me. In the magazine. In Vogue. Look.
Let me see. Oh, to think some girls actually get coats like this.
Yeah, and they're the kind who don't do any housework.
Look on the opposite page, an article.
Well, let's see, Jenny. Money isn't everything.
Well, I don't want everything. I'll just take money.
Let's see what it says.
Money isn't everything. What can money buy? An automobile so you won't get wet. Champagne so you won't get dry.
Money isn't everything. What have rich folk got?
A Florida home so you won't get cold. A yacht so you won't get hot.
An orchid or two so you won't feel blue if you have to go out at night.
And maybe a jar of caviar so your appetite won't be nice.
Oil tycoon and cattle king, radio troubadour, belittle the fun that they're for to bring and tell you that they are sure. Money isn't everything.
Money isn't everything. Money isn't everything unless you're very poor.
the spring of that year, Joe went up to his class reunion. And there he met again his old roommate, Charlie Townsend. And Charlie's uncle, Dr. Bigby Denby.
Joe, guess who Uncle Denby has got for a nurse?
I don't know. Who?
Emily. Remember Emily in college? The night you were mad at Jenny and...
Charlie, you'll have the rest of the weekend to reminisce with Joe here. I've got something important I want to talk over with him. Yes, now, first, can I order you another drink, Joe?
Oh, thank you. Watch out, Joe. He wants to oil you up before he lures you back to the big city to be a hand-holding doctor for all our upper-crust hypochondriacs.
What Charlie never seems to get through his head is that the upper crust gets sick, too, you know. And if you're going to be a doctor to them, you've got to play their game. Now, Joe, if you'll try to forget everything Charlie said, I'd like you to consider coming in with me in my practice. And in the hospital with me in Chicago. Huh? Think about it, boy. Go home and think about it.
Listen, Jenny. You've got to listen to me. It's not exactly the kind of practice I want. It's hard to explain. Then, too, I don't want to walk out on my father here. I'm just beginning to be some help to him.
All right, Joe. You're a better judge of what you can do than I am.
What do you mean?
Well, I suppose you're worried about whether you could handle a big city practice.
Oh, I could handle it all right. Why do you suppose they want me?
Well, I... Oh, no, goodness, I think you're the best doctor in the world. But it only looked to me as if you might be afraid to handle
afraid?
It.
Afraid? Of course I'm not afraid. It's only that, well, my father needs me.
You know, when you told me this, the first thing I thought of was we'd soon be so rich you could give your father enough money to complete the hospital.
You think so?
Why, of course.
Well, that's an idea.
Joe went to Chicago. He went much to his own surprise and to the surprise of Emily, who was now the nurse at Dr. Denby's fancy clinic.
What are you doing here, Joe, in a setup like this?
What do you mean, Emily?
I seem to remember on that one date we had in college, you were full of high ideals, integrity.
Sure, I still am.
You won't be after 6 months of this place.
I'm only going to stay here long enough to make a little money. Then I'll...
Oh, famous last words. You'll get to like it. And then soon you'll be an expert at yachty-yachty.
What's that?
Well, every afternoon at 5, no matter what, you have to show up at some fancy cocktail party where the conversation all sounds like yachty-yachty.
Not me. Not this baby. You wait and see.
I'll wait.
Within 2 years, Joe found himself less and less a doctor and more a politician, a promoter, a rumba dancer, a cocktail party raconteur. And then one evening, Emily came to his apartment during one of these parties.
I'm sorry to take you away from your party, Doctor.
It's all right, Emily. I brought along a drink for you. Here.
Thanks. I don't feel like one just now.
Well, all right. What have you got there?
X-ray films. Gilbert Martin.
Well, I've looked at them, Emily. I told you to phone him and tell him there was nothing to worry about.
Perhaps you'd like to take another look at them, Doctor.
What do you mean? You think the aging doctor's eyes are going back at him, eh? Let's see.
Well, you were in such a hurry to leave the office this afternoon. Don't blame you, of course, when you're giving a party for Brooke Lansdale and all those important people. But see what I mean about the X-ray.
Joe? Oh, Joe, here you are. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Mrs. Taylor.
Joe, you must come up. Mrs. Lansdale is about to leave, and she wants to talk to you. Mrs. Brooke Lansdale.
I know. $20 million, and she can't sleep.
She wants to talk to you, Joe, about donating $300,000 toward our new private pavilion. Well, I guess that's about as important to you as anything else can be right now, isn't it, Joe?
I'll go right up to her.
Doctor, shall I phone Mr. Martin and tell him his X-rays prove that he's just fine and dandy?
No. Wait till the morning. I'll look at it in the office. I don't trust this light.
Joe, please, Mrs. Lansdale.
All right, I'm going.
Oh, the trouble with Joe is he's inclined to give too much time to the little things and not enough to the things that count.
Oh, I think he's learning, Mrs. Taylor. He's learning fast.
Well, if you'll excuse me, Emily, I'm sure you can find your way out. Good night.
Good night. The boss gets on my nerves. I've got a good mind to quit. I've taken all I can. It's time to get up and get and move to another job or maybe another town. The gentleman burns me up. The gentleman gets me down. The gentleman is a dope, a man of many faults, a clumsy Joe who wouldn't know a Roomba from a waltz. The gentleman is a dope and not my cup of tea. Why do I get in a dither? He doesn't belong to me. The gentleman isn't bright. He doesn't know the score. A cake will come, he'll take a crumb and never ask for more. The gentleman's eyes are blue, but little do they see. Why am I beating my brains out? He doesn't belong to me. He's somebody else's problem. She's welcome to the guy. She'll never understand him half as well as I. The gentleman is a dope. He isn't very smart. He's just a lug you'd like to hug and hold against your heart. The gentleman doesn't know how happy he could be.
For me, Dr. Denby?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Come in and sit down.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to tell you that you've won the regard of Brooke Lansdale for your work in the clinic. Yes. The approval of our biggest trustee is even more important than my approval, eh?
Well, Dr. You Denby.
Oh, excuse me. Hello? Mr. Tubb? Chairman of what committee? Oh, yes, yes. I know. It's the worst slum in the city. Quite right. Quite right, Mr. Tubb. A cesspool. A disease hatchery, I agree. No, I will not go to the mayor. No, Mr. Tubb, our policy at the hospital is to keep out of politics. Eh? And I say to you, what? Do you know what that man called me? An old vitamin pot. Do you know what else he called me? Charlie, come in here. There was a fellow just on the phone. Do you know what he called me?
A mechanical bottom jabber.
Was that you on the phone, Charlie?
Yes.
Well, if that's all
Uncle,
you...
Uncle.
What?
I just heard you fired Carrie Middleton on the fifth floor.
Yes, yes. She was stirring up trouble among the nurses.
You know, I seem to remember an old photograph at home. You and Carrie Middleton at the Chicago World's Fair when she was a student nurse.
Yes, well, of course.
Yes, well, don't you think that's pretty rugged for a woman that's been here 25 years to fire her for that?
My boy, there's such a thing as discipline, loyalty. We must do many things we don't want to do. Duty. We must be good soldiers.
Dr. Denby, Mr. Lansdale is waiting.
Oh, well, all right. Brooke.
Yes, coming, Brooke.
Now, look, you two, you don't have to give me that fishy stare.
He's only my uncle by marriage.
Charlie, I'm sick of Lansdale coming in here and ordering us around like office boys.
Tut, 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 my boy. Duty, duty, duty.
You must be good soldiers.
Well, I'm sick of it.
So am I. But I'm not going to do anything about it, are you?
I don't know.
Well, you better know before you tell off either Mr. Lansdale or my uncle. They won't listen to any sentimental discussion about the honor and dignity of medicine, etc., etc., etc. Our world is for the forceful and not for sentimental folk, but brilliant and resourceful and paranoid gentlefolk.
Not soft and sentimental folk.
Allegro, a musician, would so describe the speed of it, the clash and competition of counterpoint.
The need of it?
We cannot prove the need of it. We know no other way of living out our day. Our music must be galloping and gay.
We muffle all the undertones, the minor blood and thunder tones. The overtones are all we care to play.
Hysterically frantic, we are stubbornly romantic, and doggedly determined to be gay.
Morning and night, Allegro. Don't stop whatever you do. Do something dizzy and new. Keep up the hullabaloo. Allegro.
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 We spin and we spin and we spin and we spin. Playing a game no one can win. The men who corner wheat, the men who corner gin, the men who rule the airwaves, the denizens of din.
They spin and they spin, they spin and they spin.
The girls who dig for gold and won't give in for tin. The lilies of the field, so femininely thin. They toil not, but oh, how they spin.
Oh, how they spin. Oh, how they spin.
May's in love with Kay's husband. He's in love with Sue. Sue's in love with May's husband. What are they to do? Tom's in love with Tim's wife. She's in love with Sam. Sam's in love with Tom's wife. So they're in a jam.
They are smart little sheep who have lost their way.
La, la, la. Rhythm, rhyme, merry, like a leg roll. Same tempo, running like a leg roll. Don't stop whatever you do. Do something silly and new. Keep up the hullabaloo. A leg roll, a leg roll, a leg roll, a leg roll.
City people?
No, no. Why should I? But this fancy crowd of hypochondriacs that we get. Who's out there now?
Well, Mrs. Lansdale just arrived and...
I knew you must be in by now.
Oh, Mrs. Lansdale,
Nurse, why didn't you tell me he was in here?
Oh, well, he asked me to not...
What I've got to say won't take long, Dr. Taylor. The other night I was just dozing off about 2 a.m. when the phone rang. It was my husband to say that he'd be home late. It then occurred to me that most nights I lie awake wondering when and if he's coming home.
Well, he works too hard.
So I put a detective on him. Well, it seems that my husband has got himself a girl. Here's a carbon copy of the report.
Well, Mrs. Lansdale, this is a private matter.
Oh, I don't care if the nurse hears. The papers will have it tomorrow when I fly to Reno.
Well, is there anything you want me to do? You want something to quiet your nerves?
No. I want to enjoy this. You might read that detective's report when you get time. It'll give you quite a kick. Good afternoon.
Emily, isn't there anyone in that waiting room with a broken arm or a gallstone? Is there anybody out there worth a doctor's time and knowledge? Can't you scare us up a ruptured appendix or a pair of infected tonsils? What kind of practice is this, anyhow? I've got to spend my time reading reports like this. Private detectives who... who spy on wives and husbands. Emily, do you know who Mr. Lansdale's girl is?
Yes, I do.
Does everybody know, except me?
They seem to.
You know what's very sad about this? The heartbreaking part of it is that I don't care. I must have stopped loving Jenny some time ago, and I didn't know it. Not until this minute. Somewhere in this rat race, somewhere along the line, we lost each other. Now she's Lansdale's girl, and it means no more to me than just another cheap little setup like so many that pass through this office every day. They have no faint resemblance to love. There's nothing real about any of it. Nothing real about the whole place. What am I doing here? What am I doing here?
Feeling better, Doctor?
What? Oh, Emily. Yes, I was just remembering something.
Oh, Joe. There you are, Joe. Mr. Lansdale here has something to say to you. Charlie, boy, come in here and listen.
Joe, my boy, you're about to be made physician-in-chief to this hospital. Youngest man ever appointed. You will be the head man. We're making Bigby Denby president of the medical board.
I'm being kicked upstairs.
What do you say, Joe?
Well, I don't know what to say.
Well, what do you say, Emily?
Well, gee, Willikers.
Well, I hope you're not so tongue-tied, Joe, when you get in front of the trustees. Come on, Joe. We're late.
Yes, yes, of course.
I know one little lady who'll be proud of her husband today.
Well, what are you thinking about, Nursie?
Oh, just thinking how hard it is for a man like Joe to get off a merry-go-round after it gets going fast.
Well, I can understand a girl getting stuck on a fellow like Joe. Wouldn't blame her.
You wouldn't? Thanks, pal.
Want to take the day off and go to a burlesque show?
I don't know. I think the dedication ceremony will be funnier.
And now, gentlemen, it is my pleasure and honor to present the man to whom we are dedicating this bronze tablet in the new private pavilion. Bigby Denby, M.D. Physician, scientist, humanitarian, and better than all these, an executive. To use his own phrase, he has been a good soldier. Bigby Denby has for years given up all ideas.
Not the leader, on the white boulder dash. Lonely, the lonely, strife and trash. No one knows where his youth has gone. No one knows where his heart has gone. Drop, 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 goes on, and on, and on, and on, and on.
Mr. Chairman, trustees, friends,
The cup of my happiness runneth over. My heart is so full, words fail me. And yet, I feel I must in some.
The prattle and the tattle, the gab and the gush, the chatter and the patter and the twaddle and the tush go on and on and on and on.
My co-worker, my young but very talented friend, Joseph Taylor, Jr., the youngest man ever to receive this appointment.
Ladies and gentlemen, this comes to me as a complete surprise. I look upon this appointment as a challenge. One must approach with deep humility the task of succeeding so illustrious a predecessor as Dr. Bigby Denby. He has been an ornament to medicine, an ornament to his city, an ornament... It takes a special talent to be an ornament. I am not blessed with his talent. I must therefore decline the appointment.
You can't do that, Joe.
Please, Jenny. I have another offer in a small hospital where my father is physician in chief. I'll be his assistant.
You fool.
Please, Jenny.
You talk like an idiot schoolboy. The big city is a wicked place and all the people in small towns are good and pure.
No, I don't say that. You came from a small town. Big towns are filled with good people and bad people. Good doctors and bad doctors. And so are small towns. I just happened to strike the wrong crowd. So all I can do is go back among people I know I can help and start all over again. I'm going home.
Now, look here, Joe. You can't do this. What'll I tell the papers?
Why don't you tell them just what I said?
Tell the papers he's just a small town doctor.
Okay, tell them that.
Now you can do whatever you want, whatever you want to do.
Dr. Taylor, wait a minute. Can you use a nurse back there?
Come on, Emily.
Here you are in the wonderful world, and specially made for you.
Hey, what about me?
One Come on, Charlie.
One foot, now you can go wherever you want, wherever you want to go.
The curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild on the Air production of Allegro, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation. We express our thanks to our stars, Jane Powell as Emily, John Lund as Joe Taylor, and Kenny Delmar as Bigby Denby, and to Roberta Jonet, who was featured as Jenny Brinker, and to Douglas Watson, who was featured as Charlie Townsend. Our thanks also to the other members of our cast, whom you heard in these roles as Marjorie Taylor, Shannon Boland, as Dr. Taylor, Bob Shackleton, as Hazel, Pat England, as Brooke Lansdale, Elliot Reed, and as Mrs. Lansdale, Florida Freebus. And as the singing voice of Joe, John Baker of the Metropolitan Opera Company. Now here again is Elliot Reed with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theater Guild on the Air will bring you Rosalind Russell and Walter Abel in Good Housekeeping, a modern comedy of a wife who believes that keeping house included keeping the reins on her husband's ambitions and an eye on her daughter's romances. We hope you'll be with us. Thank you.
Remember next week on the United States Steel Hour, Good Housekeeping, starring Rosalind Russell and Walter Abel. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Armina Marshall, executive producer. S. Mark Smith is editor. Music was conducted by Harold Levy. John Lund may currently be seen starring in the Paramount picture, Darling, How Could You? Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at the same time.
The Theater Guild on the Air, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 25th, 1951, on ABC. The original play, which opened in October of 1947, was actually produced by the Theater Guild themselves. And the curtain comes down on this hour of Broadway on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.